Before we move on to the Schaeffer's move to St. Louis, there were just a couple more things I wanted to add to what I was saying in the last section on their time in Pennsylvania. First, my fourth point about their time there had been the emphasis on the urgency of prayer and prayer in various different contexts. I just wanted to add one other comment there, which was the something Edith shares in the tapestry about her anxiety with regard to moving to St. Louis. She recounts how she the children were so well settled where they were in school and in the home they were, that she was very anxious about moving. And so as they began to pray more and more about the possible coming move, she was really needing some kind of direction from the Lord as to whether the move was right. And they had many people in the church there trying to persuade them not to go, all sorts of people that they respected, which made it very much more difficult as they prayed about their future. And she writes on page 225 about how God's answer to her prayers for confirmation about the move came to her. And she was praying very, quite tearfully, in fact, just thinking about the future, whether they should move or not, needing some sense of direction from the Lord. And as she was kneeling and crying and praying, she started to sing. And she gives on page 225 what she sang, and it was a verse of one of her favorite hymns by Francis Ridley Havergal. But when she went to look it up afterwards, she discovered that that verse wasn't part of the hymn, that it was a new verse which God had given her in that moment, which was a tremendous encouragement to her. And the words which she sang were, "My will made known to thee, as thou dost wait on me, the future now thou canst not see, but I will work for thee." They were God's words of encouragement to her. And they were quite a turning point in her life. A tremendous sense of knowing that we can really turn to God when we're in need, that He will direct us in the way that He wants us to go. And this is an element which became more and more apparent throughout the rest of their ministry when you come to the years of the Brie, and that was a real openness to God to be able to work into our lives in ways that are quite unexpected, rather than putting God in a box and saying, well, He could only speak to me this way or this way or this way, but a readiness to be open to His moving and speaking into one's own personal life. The fifth point I wanted to make here, to move on to a different area, was something about chastening, about the Lord's discipline. Again, Edith recounts this with regard to herself. I mentioned last time how Francis learned something about the Lord's discipline in his anger as they were moving to seminary in Wilmington. But this time it was to do with Edith and the move to St. Louis. She had all sorts of plans about what they were going to do when she got to St. Louis. And it started off with her saying, well, whatever else happens, when we get there, we're not going to be living in anybody else's house. We are going to have our own house from the day we arrive. The last thing I will do is take my husband, my children, and go and stay with somebody else. That is not a good way for a new pastor to begin his work in a new situation. And so entirely by herself, she set about planning about how she was going to do this. She arranged that she was going to go down to St. Louis, that she was going to find a house. She had a measuring tape to take with her to start measuring for curtains that she was going to start making for the house. And as soon as she had found the house and discovered what size the windows were and so on, everything was planned out. The ticket was bought to go down by train and everything else. And she describes in detail what then happened as she was ironing her blouse for the second time, quite unnecessarily, making sure that everything was just exactly right. She was always very concerned, and still is, about what she wore. She had an accident with the iron. It basically blew up in her face, and she was taken into hospital with second-degree burns. And she describes what happened then as a moment where she was chastened by God. Not that she believes that he caused the iron to blow up. She has never had that kind of view of bad things happening as if they were directly sent by God. As James says, that God does not tempt us with evil because he is not evil himself, but that he is able to use such situations to chasten us and to discipline us. And she points out how she said at that very moment, when she was on the table in the hospital, because even after she was being taken to the hospital, when Francis came home and found her in this state, with her face bleeding and this explosion which had damaged her eye, she was still insisting that she was going to catch the train. So she was rushed off to the hospital, and even when she was lying on the table there and they were bandaging her up to look like a mummy, you know, with her head twice as big as normal in bandages because it was really a bad burn, she was still saying, well, I've got to go and catch that train to get to St. Louis and find this house that we're going to live in so we don't have to stay with anybody else. And she says, while she was laying on the table, she said, a change had come in me, and I had said meekly and with confession of my sinful, stubborn will, which had not even asked for the Lord's will, I'm sorry, Lord. I'll stop my struggling against your will, whatever it is. I see now that this has been all my scheme, and I give up. I won't go until we all go. I'll stay at whoever's home you want us to stay. She had really learned a lesson there about not making your own plans without asking for God's blessing, about really waiting on him, about being prepared to do whatever he wants us to do, even if it's difficult. And she goes on then to speak about chastening, how very important it is that when somebody is chastened, that it's not not somebody else's job to point out that you're being chastened. She says, even with the situation I've mentioned before, where they had their accident in the car when he was getting so furiously angry, she didn't say to him, now the Lord is teaching you. And on this occasion, he didn't say to her, now Edith, do you realize that the Lord has been trying to get through to you and you haven't been listening and now he's chastening you? She points out that it's never our place to rebuke one another in that kind of way, to point out to one another what God's chastening is, that this is something individually between us and our Heavenly Father, which we have to learn before him. It's ours to bow before God when we understand what he's doing in our lives. And she points out how the personal relationship we have with him is not simply in wonderful prayers being answered, and of course she gives many examples of that in her books, but also when we experience these disciplinings of the Lord. Now that takes us on to the next section, which is the move to St. Louis. They moved to St. Louis in September of 1943. They now had two children. Priscilla was six and Susan was two. He became the pastor of the Bible Presbyterian Church, which was at that time situated down in the city on Union and Enright. It later became Covenant Church, and of course has long since moved out into the West County here. But at that time it was down in the city. When they arrived, they stayed in the home of one of the families in the church for the first 3.5 months, the very thing that she had refused to even consider. And they had a wonderful relationship with that family and remained friends with them for years and years afterwards. Just to say a little bit before I make some very particular points about their ministry here in St. Louis, I was talking to somebody who was a member of the church at that time, who was in fact his secretary during those years, Vivian Mogineau, and she was saying he used to preach sermons which were almost always 45 minutes to an hour. Some people found that difficult, especially if they had to be back home by 12:30 and he didn't finish till then. They had to catch their tram back to wherever they lived. He was involved in helping start several new churches and encouraging struggling churches down in Poplar Bluff and Valley Park, a mission in the town on Sydney Street, and the church out in Afton, as well as the work there in what later became Covenant Church. This period here in St. Louis saw the development, the maturing of his pastoral gifts. In speaking to me about this the other day, she said that everybody came to him for counsel, for prayer, and for encouragement, that his practical wisdom as a pastor was tremendously appreciated by the congregation. They moved on Christmas Eve, 3.5 months after they arrived, into a house they bought down on Waterman Boulevard, 5248 Waterman Boulevard, down there in the city. What shall we say about their time here? There are several main points I'd like to make. The first is with regard to the use of their home. As soon as they'd moved into this house on Waterman Boulevard, they began to use it for their work. And this, of course, became a theme of their whole life. The tremendous importance of having an open home, of practicing hospitality, of inviting people in for meals, of doing things in your home so that one's home is part, a central part of one's ministry. They saw that simply as obedience to the New Testament's commandment to practice hospitality. Very quickly, they began a children's class with friends of their own children in their home. Some of these children were from Jewish families, Roman Catholic families, Lutheran families, Episcopalian families, non-churched families. They started a Bible class almost immediately with little children from their neighborhood. Also very soon, they started a women's training class, encouraging other women in the church to start Bible classes in their homes. Very shortly, in fact, there were 20 women meeting in their home each week, and 20 classes for children in these women's homes. What they would do, as when the women came to their home each week, was to Francis and Edith would teach the women who came the lesson for the week as if they were children. She was making phanograph illustrations for them, so they would teach them together, and then they would all go down to the basement, make their own phanograph illustrations for their own lesson with the children. They would discuss the work they were doing together. They would pray together for various children who were coming to their classes, and really encourage and support one another. This became, it was really the beginning of what later was called Children for Christ, and I'll move on to that in a moment. Also in their home, they began to reach out to the Jewish neighbors who lived around them. And this became a theme which has been present with them throughout their lives, and that was a longing, a tremendous longing, to be able to communicate the gospel to Jewish people. In fact, one of the first things he wrote was a pamphlet which was widely distributed around St. Louis called The Bible Believing Christian and the Jew. This was in 1943. They were very strongly opposed to anti-Semitism, and that has always been one of the commitments of their ministry. And very recently, just in the last couple of years, God has really blessed that for Edith in terms of giving her personally, since Francis' death, many, many opportunities to reach out to Jewish people. But it was always a concern of theirs, and it really was fanned into flame at this time, living in an area in St. Louis where there were many Jewish people around them. They also had a wedding in their home, and Edith describes this in the tapestry, pages 239 and 240. It's quite an amusing description. It's a good example of her creativity. Also, as she acknowledges, of her perfectionism, which went over the top sometimes. She describes how she was 3 weeks from having her third baby herself, and because their own home had a beautiful staircase coming down, they decided to have the wedding there, and she would take the place of the bride's mother, and she would prepare the house for the wedding. She would cook all the food for the wedding, and if you ever had one of her meals, you know how beautifully she would prepare everything in such a situation. I can imagine the kitchen must have been a total disaster by the time she'd finished, but she got all this done, and then she hadn't had a chance to get herself ready, so she didn't actually go to the wedding herself. She describes this in the book, but it just is a good illustration of her creativity, which was later used so much in Le Brie, of the way she was prepared to take her home and really make it a place for somebody else to have something they would remember for the rest of their life. So that's one thing, the use of their home. What she called later in her book, What is a Family? A family is to be an open door. That is, an open door to other people. That every Christian individual, every Christian couple, every Christian family is called to really open their home up to other people. The second element of their work here is the one that I want to concentrate on in this period now. and that is the children's work which they began there. As well as the work they were doing in their own home, this particular Bible class, the work of Children for Christ developed. It began formally in December of 1944, just a year after they came to St. Louis, with Francis Schaeffer as its local chairman. It began formally with a separation from Child Evangelism Fellowship. They had been involved there with children's work with Child Evangelism Fellowship in St. Louis. They felt that they needed to start something new, separated from Child Evangelism Fellowship, because of the conviction that anybody teaching the children ought to be a member of a Bible-believing church. A Bible-believing church which was part of a Bible-believing denomination, in order that when children were converted or became interested in the gospel through the work of the Bible studies, they would then be encouraged to go to a Bible-believing church rather than possibly running the risk of going into a church which was half liberal. Now, the Child Evangelism Fellowship refused to take a stand on this. They felt that they were happy to have anybody as a teacher who was themselves a born-again evangelical Christian, regardless of what church they were affiliated to. But at this time, the Schaeffers took this view of separation very strongly, and we'll come back to that later. So they started this new work, Children for Christ. It's very interesting, if you read the minutes of the separation between what they were doing and Child Evangelism Fellowship, they were very careful not to criticize, not to challenge the spirituality of any of the people involved who stayed with Child Evangelism Fellowship or anything like that. So the division that came about was done in a very careful way so that it wouldn't leave bitterness afterwards. They had seen enough of that already in the split which had taken place a few years before, when he was a seminary student, and we referred to that a couple of sessions ago. The three words which were used on their little brochures to describe the work of Children for Christ were separated, church-centered, and complete. Separated meant simply, as I've said, that everyone teaching in the Children for Christ classes was required to be an evangelical themselves, of course, but also a member of an evangelical church which was not involved in the World Council of Churches or the Federal Council of Churches. They worked with people from any evangelical denomination. So there was this commitment to a broader evangelicalism. They weren't working only with people, let's say, either within a Presbyterian or within a Reformed context, but they were prepared to work with any evangelical church which was not a part of the WCC. The work was church-centered, and this was one of its primary distinctives, in that every group was encouraged to work through a particular local evangelical church, rather than being just something which was separate in somebody's home, which didn't then tie the children into a church, but it was the work was developed through local churches. And it was complete. What they meant by complete was that it had a 7-point program, and I'll go over those 7 points, because it was very comprehensive. It really was complete. The first part of it, it had sort of 7 thrusts to it, if you like. The first thrust was home classes, classes like they had in their own home. These classes they were fairly structured, but they had a more informal atmosphere because they were meeting in people's homes. The children in these classes were of mixed ages. There were lots of choruses and with action encouraged. The classes illustrated by feltographs. They encouraged the children to bring their friends, were characterized by lots of scripture memorization. It's interesting reading about it, because far more than you'd find in almost anything today. A lot of scriptural memorization, a strong encouragement to those teaching the classes to appeal to the children for a response to the gospel, and a strong emphasis on prayerful preparation for the classes by the teachers. So there were these home classes taking place, first of all over St. Louis, and 20 right out of their own church there. The second part of, or the second thrust of this complete work for children was what were called released time classes. At that time, some states here in the U.S. permitted children to be released from school for 1 hour a week for voluntary religious education. They required these to have a much more formal atmosphere than the home classes. So the atmosphere of these was a school-like atmosphere, a much more formal educational context. The stress was very strongly on memory work and on question and answer, and the children had to do homework. The children were grouped according to grades, according to their grades at school, and they involved a very clear evangelical stand, being very careful to distinguish what the evangelical gospel is from modernism, from liberalism. So that was the second part of this thrust. All over the city there were groups of children being released from school 1 hour a week to have these release time classes. Third element of this work with children was open air work, rather similar to their first work in Grove City, where he'd just gone out into the highways and byways and dragged children in. They went out into the parks and public places to draw in unchurched children. These, of course, are much more informal gatherings. Bible stories, hymn singing, and outdoor activities. And they created a great big flannel board for these, and the reverse of the flannel board was a slate board with chalk, which they could just flip over and either use the slate or the flannel board. And, of course, these involved a lot of visiting and a lot of very careful follow-up with the children to encourage them to come to others of the classes. So it was open air work, just going out into the community, into Forest Park or wherever, and just having classes out in the park for anybody who would come along. The fourth element was called Empire Builders, and that was like Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts, but of course with Christian content, with a Christian emphasis. It was had on the one hand an emphasis on Bible study and on the other on scout craft. So there was lots of fun and games, outdoor activities, hiking, things like that. And then at the same time, there was a lot of emphasis on biblical study. In these groups, they encouraged the pastor of the local church to lead the boys. And they emphasized very strongly that the pastor, if he was going to do this, had to love children, and he had to enjoy doing outdoor activities. They would meet for worship and for Bible study in the church, but it was all very carefully structured. Schaefer produced a 160-page workbook for the kids in these classes, and they would regularly have advancement tests in both scout craft and in the Bible. They were divided into two groups, juniors and seniors. And another element of them was strong encouragement of leadership among the children, beginning to recognize boys and girls who were seen to have gifts of leadership to lead the others and develop those gifts. Again, this involved very careful follow-up with the families, trying to draw the parents into the life of the church as well. What was unusual about this, of course, it was all based on the local church. It wasn't just simply something out in the community, but it was related very specifically to a church, and that's why they encouraged the pastor, if possible, to lead the group. The fifth element was summer Bible school. They stressed very strongly that this was not to be a vacation play school, but it would be real school for 4 to 5 weeks each summer. It wasn't just a week, but 4 to 5 weeks each summer. It would meet 5 days a week from 9 to 12. It was all very carefully worked out with a 12-year program. So if a child went right through the whole 12-year program, they'd end up with a diploma at the end. There were report cards and so on. With these summer Bible schools, there was a lot of door-to-door visiting by the pastor. In fact, Edith mentions how in one summer, Schaefer visited over 500 homes in St. Louis, personally, himself, as well as other people going out, inviting children to come. And that first summer, they had 400 children at the summer Bible school for the whole month. I remember talking to Hervey Woodson about this a few weeks ago, and he was telling me just how very seriously these things were taken. And on one occasion, he recounts how he didn't go, And Schaefer was at his house that afternoon to find out what was the matter with him. He really followed up. If any of the boys didn't turn up, he went out to see where they were, see whether they were sick, whether there was some problem in the family or something like that. He took his pastoral responsibilities tremendously seriously, including with quite small children, of really treating them all as individuals, following them all up, really showing a care and concern for them as individuals. In the summer Bible school, the children were divided into grades. Vivian mentioned that she was teaching one of these classes one year. She was Schaefer's secretary during this time, and she had 48-year-olds. That was her class. 48-year-olds. So there was this huge summer Bible school taking place here in St. Louis. If possible, they tried to pay the teachers to make it practical for young mothers with small children to come, so they could have somebody else look after their own little kids, tiny ones, so that they could come and help with the teaching. Each day began with 20 minutes of worship, prayer, of singing, led by the pastor, Bible reading. Then there'd be an hour's class, 20 minutes play, and another hour or so class. They had a big picnic for everyone at the end of the Bible school, and a closing night with the parents. And Hervey mentioned to me, and Vivian too, what an enormous amount they were able to communicate to these children during this period. And many of these were children brought from all over St. Louis, from the inner city, from North St. Louis, from South St. Louis, who would come to these things. And on the last night, they would let their parents know what they'd learned. And they had learned an enormous amount during that period of time. The sixth element was camp. This was after the summer Bible school. There would be a two-week camp with some teaching, but lots and lots of fun out in the country somewhere with good wholesome food. There was a fund for poor children from the city who wouldn't be able to afford to go, so that they could go. The emphasis in the camps was on conversion. So many of the children coming were from non-Christian homes. And then for those who were already Christians, on consecrating themselves to God's service. So that was the sixth element, a two-week camp after summer Bible school. The seventh was rallies. These were held for children from a larger area, let's say from the whole St. Louis area, so that several different churches with their own empire builders or their own Bible class groups, home class groups or whatever, could all meet together. So they would bring the children from a larger area together. Their purpose was to partly just have fun by being together in a large group, but also to show the children that they were not just part of a tiny movement of Christians, but there were many, many other Christians too. There might be just one or two of them in their own particular school or on their own particular street, but from all over the area, there were many, many Christians who could come together on an occasion like this, not just a handful of believers. Parents were invited to come, but it was basically a kids' rally. Mrs. Schaefer created an enormous shadow graph with a great big framework and a white sheet over it, and then they made life-size cut-out cardboard figures and plywood figures, which they had to have adults holding, of course, behind this thing to illustrate whatever Bible story they were using for the evening, for the rally. 700 children came to the first of these rallies that was held there in Covenant Church. It was reported in the Post-Dispatch. There's, I think, the article, at least the pictures, are up in the archives in the library. So those were the seven points of the Children for Christ. You can see this developed into something really big. They had a tremendous passion for reaching out to children, and also a great deal of organizational ability of really just getting down and doing things. In 1945, by the summer of 1945, the work of Children for Christ became national. It started just right here in St. Louis, in the church where he was pastor. But within the next few months, it became a national organization, and Francis Schaefer became its director. They got student representatives at various evangelical colleges and seminaries. There were articles about the work in the Christian press. Schaefer went and taught training classes at some Bible colleges for teachers for these various activities of the Children for Christ program. They worked on children's tracts as well. Some they wrote, and some Edith's sister Janet wrote one, and which was illustrated by Edith. Quite a bit of material they produced themselves, the flannel graphs, the shadow graphs, the Empire Builder's Manual, and so on. And then other people like Marie Wallace, for example, wrote, produced one of the things for the children, and various other people. But this, as it became a national organization, it meant a lot of traveling for Francis Schaeffer all over the country in terms of encouraging groups in other cities to start and in other churches all around the United States. By 1948, the work became fully international, and Schaeffer became its international director. By 1950, there were works in the USA, in Alaska, which wasn't a state then, I guess, Chile, Palestine, there was one in Bethlehem, in India, Japan, France, Switzerland, Holland, Norway, and Finland. By 1952, Germany, North Africa, Brazil, and Spain as well. The Schaeffers carried on producing material for these. They wrote a series of Bible studies on the book of Luke, which later became Everybody Can Know at a much later point. But they were written for the Children for Christ work, and they created flannel graphs to go with them. These lessons were translated into French and Norwegian, Spanish, Dutch, Finnish, Chinese, and Portuguese. So it became a fully international work. Schaeffer wrote this in 1953. This was, of course, after they'd moved to Europe. I just wanted to fill you in on what actually happened to this work, Children for Christ. He wrote this in his director's report in 1953. Children for Christ is one of the greatest living demonstrations of what can be done by the power of the Holy Spirit without great fanfare. I'll read this again when I finished it. It has gone from its beginning in St. Louis to national and international size, so that at the present time, 20 foreign countries, 35 states, and the District of Columbia have works in them. God has given an international work to us with very little human pressure. And all that time, there was only one half salary being paid to a half-time secretary, Miss Bernice Killam. The Schaeffers had done an enormous amount of the work themselves, with no remuneration for it. They weren't being paid at any time by Children for Christ. Some of their expenses were covered in terms of printing and so on, these things that they produced. But the work had cost very little money. It was in many, many different countries, in different languages. And I'll repeat again what he said, because this became such an important thing to them. Children for Christ is one of the greatest living demonstrations of what can be done by the power of the Holy Spirit without great fanfare. God has given an international work to us with very little human pressure. One may add, is obviously the central thing here is the tremendous blessing that God poured out on this work, but also they put an enormous amount of effort into it and really used their gifts in this work. Children for Christ, this is just a footnote, was eventually closed down in 1982, and the remaining money was given to the Home for the Children of Lepers in India at Bhopur. The Schaeffers had not been involved in it for many, many years by that time. I think in the early 50s they stopped being involved directly in the work of Children for Christ as the work of Labrie began to grow and take their whole time. And the work was carried on then by other people. I think Don McNair became its director in St. Louis.